So an interesting Ramban, and I'm going to blow Mordechai Schmerler. Very big Rambam day here. Okay, so welcome back. So a lot of the attention in the Berachas Yaakov is placed on the Yehudas and the Ruvains and the Yosefs. Those are the big Berachas and the featured people and the Shimon Halevi. But we don't pay so much attention to the other people. Yisachar we pay attention to. Obviously Yisachar is Zvulun. What about the Gads, Naphtalis, and the Duns? I don't get so much attention. So let's pay a little attention to Naphtali's bracha. Naphtali is compared to, oh, Shalom Aleichem Eli, welcome back, Mazel Tov. So Naphtali is compared to an Ayala Shlucha, a ram, or something in that, female ram, something in that genre, that gets sent, Hanosein Imre Shvar, that gives words, Imre Shvar, important words, in this case, good words. So what is this juxtaposition between a ram that gives words, that informs? And what are the good words that it's informing? Naphtali Ayala Shulcha Hanosin Imre Shafer, not Shvar, but Shafer. So the Ramban breaks open the case, and then I'm going to take the Ramban one step further. Ramban breaks open the case that this was a method of information and communication, because there was a certain type of a ram that had a homing device, like homing pigeons. So if you sent the homing pigeon away, it would bring messages back. So I would send a message to Tinek, and then I would send the dove to Tinek, or deliver it to Ellie, and then all of a sudden it returned back. So it'd be a way for me to communicate with someone long distance. Evidently, and he quotes the Yishalmi, there were certain types of rams that had a similar homing device. And these kings would raise the rams and send them to distant land, and the Yishalmi talks about that. So it's a way of communication. Let's say I send it to a faraway king in Africa. I send him a whole shipload of rams. And then when he wanted to send messages back to Eretz Yisrael, he'd send the rams and let them loose with messages on their horns, and they'd come back and come back to their original home. Now, because of that, the rams are associated, or these Ayala Shluchas, are associated with information. And what information are they giving? What's this bracha? Yaakov will be part of the post office, you'll be part of the internet. So Yaakov's bracha is that Naphtali, because Naphtali's section in Eretz Yisrael is very fertile, it was up north. So the fertility and the supernatural fertility that Naphtali receives in Eretz Yisrael in his chalek, that will be something that will be bring good tidings for the rest of the Jewish people. Because in the days of the first Beis HaMikdash, where we still lived under supernatural conditions, so every time there was great fertility up north, everyone felt as if we're going to have a lot. Remember, that's why the northern kingdom was so successful, even though they didn't have the political legacy, because they were not Yehuda, but they had a lot of the money, they had a lot of the fertility, a lot of the resources, had a lot of the shipping lanes. So they had a lot of fertility. So the fact that a ram returns to its original home is irrelevant for the Ramban. It just means that that associates the ram with information exchange, because that's how they send information. So Naphtali's role is to provide information, but the return is just like the preface. Rams return home. Since they return home, they're used for information. Naphtali's role and the fertility's role is to provide information about a year of abundance. I'm reading this Ramban, I'm saying, I think there's something a little more happening in our day. The Ramban didn't live through it, so he couldn't write it. Again, you have to see Ruach HaKodesh, but something what's happening is that when we return home, and we've returned home like that ram that returns home after being far away, one of the signs that we see that this is real when we're returning home is the restored fertility that occurs in the country that's characteristic of what Naphtali had in the first Beis HaMikdash. When you ask, well, what are the signs that we're returning home? What are the signs that this is part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's invitation to return home? So there are a couple of signs, but one of them is this land was fallow, this land was dry, this land was cursed. You all know the famous trip of Mark Twain to Palestine in the middle 19th century. It was scorched, it was cursed, no one could colonize it, no one could live here for more than a couple, decades, and constantly changing between Christians and Muslims and Turks and the British. And all of a sudden we come back and this land begins to bloom. So when the Ayala comes back, namely when Am Yisrael is the Ayala Shlucha, so Naphtali's power, namely the fertility that was always associated with Naphtali, the agricultural fertility, will be the Imre Shefer, will be part of the statement of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that this is returned. So that there's a meaning to this pasuk that I sense the Ramban didn't. For the Ramban, the returning part was irrelevant. The fact that this ram returned made it an information device. And Naphtali is an information device because its abundance would signal to the Jewish people that would be a year of abundance in the harvest. But I'm sensing that this is a prophecy that has a cross-pollinating element. That when you return, and Jews will return to their land no matter where they are, they could be in Russia, they could be in Afghanistan, they could be in Argentina, they'll return home like this Ayala Shulcha, they will receive Imre Shvar that was typically associated with Naphtali, they will receive it as one of the signs they're returning home. So it's really a fascinating way to apply the Ramban. I wouldn't have seen it without the Ramban. The Ramban wasn't talking about the process because he didn't live through the process. Okay, another interesting Ramban. Ramban says, why did Yaakov bury Rachel on the roadside? So we know the two answers. The simple answer is because she died on the road and Yaakov had a lot of family. And even though we think that Beit Lechem and Hebron are pretty close to one another, it wouldn't have been so hard to walk to Hebron. Yaakov said it had a lot of people, a lot of children. Okay? Another reason is that Rachel had to be buried on the roadside. Rashi says that when the Jews leave Yerushalayim in the days of Nebuchadnezzar, they'll be able to daven at Rachel's kever and ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to return, prompting the famous famous story that Rachel davened to Hashem, and Hashem promises Rachel, "Mini kol ech mibechi ve'naich midamad," the psukim in Yirmiyah. By the way, just out of interest, in 1967, when they finally had permission to come back to the Gush, remember, we reclaimed the Gush in 1967 in June, Six-Day War. This was a closed military zone for a couple months. Finally, a few days before Rosh Hashanah of 1967, which was 4 or 5 months after the war, the orphans, who had been orphaned in 48, received permission just to come back and to start a symbolic settlement, which turned out to be Kfar Etzion. So they started their day by visiting their parents' kfaris in Har HaZeitim, these people who had been massacred in 48. And then they walked through Beit Lechem. You still could walk through Beit Lechem. I remember those days it was safe to walk through Beit Lechem. And they went to Kibbutz Rachel and they read those psukim to Rachel. Mini kolech mibechi, stop crying. B'shev avanim l'gvulam, we're coming home. So talk about living nevuah. They stood in front of Rachel and they said, those psukim that Hashem told you as a prophecy, we're now fulfilling that prophecy. And by the end of their day, they made it back to Kfar Etzion and they started to build Kfar Etzion to fulfill B'shev me'eretz oyeh, b'shev avanim l'gvulam. So these are the two classic reasons that Yaakov buries Rachel. Ramban takes issue with that second story. What's the reason that it doesn't seem to be that way in the pasuk? There has to be a remez in the pasuk. He feels like, well, if it's a medrash, obviously you have to accept it. But he gives a third reason. Remember, keep in mind that the part of the issue that those two reasons raise is if it's really, really in Beit Lechem, Kever Rachel, then it's unlikely the Jews would have passed by Beit Lechem on the way to Babylonia. If you're being exiled from Yerushalayim to Babylonia, you're moving north, not south. Beit Lechem is south of Yerushalayim. And similarly, if Rachel's buried in Beit Lechem, why didn't Yaakov just take the extra 2 days and travel to Hebron? So this has led many, many modern archaeologists and modern academics to believe that Rachel's not really, really buried in Beit Lechem. There is a northern Beit Lechem that they've established in Tanakh, and that would fit the narrative of them traveling to Beit Lechem in the north on the way to Babylonia, and that would be also very far from where Yaakov was. Very far from Hebron, but would be in Yaakov's journey on the way back from Lavan. If he were, let's say, in the north, in Beit John or somewhere near there, he'd be coming back from Lavan. It'd be really long to get to Hebron, very far to get to Hebron. We once asked Rav Amital, well, if modern archaeology has established that Rachel isn't buried in Beit Lechem, does that mean that Kever Rachel is not a place we should daven? So Rav Amital said a very famous answer, no, because the tears of the Jewish people that have been shed over that site over the last 2,000 years and the dreams of the Jews that have been directed to that site makes that site a Bakum Kodesh. So whether Rachel's buried there or not, that's a Bakum Kodesh because of Amisal. It's a classic of Amital line. So it's interesting, those two answers. Ravan is the third answer. Why didn't Yaakov bury Rachel in Maris and Machpelah? He was embarrassed. Who was he embarrassed from? His father and his grandfather. Why was he embarrassed? Because he had two wives. And he violated halacha not to have two wives. So this way, he didn't want to bring two wives to Maris and Machpelah. There's plenty of room in Maris and Machpelah to bury two wives, Rachel and Leah, but he told himself, let Rachel be buried somewhere else, so I don't have to be embarrassed when I come to visit my grandparents, because parents and grandparents can marry two wives. Now, if this was such a terrible crime, he should have divorced Rachel or Leah. Or at least, if you find for you give a teretz and chutz laretz, as the Ramban says, you're allowed to violate halacha for the avos. It's only an eretz Yisrael, the avos have to keep halacha. So then, when he returned the parshas v'yishlach, he should have divorced one of them. Okay, Rachel dies pretty soon afterwards, but he should have at least taken initiative. So the answer to this Ramban, my answer to this Ramban, is sometimes you have to make decisions in life, and it's obvious that Hashem wants him to stay married to Rachel and Leah because these are the mothers of his 12 shvatim, and all the shvatim are shivtei. But you can be embarrassed not just for something, for a crime you did. Busha is not just for crimes. Busha just means that you're caught in situations. Yaakov, if he had to redraw his life, would not have wanted four wives, right? Yaakov wanted to marry Rachel. This was HaKadosh Baruch Hu was gozer on him, obviously. This is in the cards, pretty obvious to see. No one wants him to divorce Leah. No one wants him to divorce Bilhah and Zilpah, because then those children are going to be motherless. And those are children that are part of Yaakov's entourage. But you can be embarrassed in life by realities that aren't your fault. There's busha doesn't mean fault. Busha just means embarrassment, sneers. You don't want people seeing certain things. And even if you have to perform them. It's very important. People don't understand the trait of busha because we're living in an environment in which there's no shame and everyone just exhibits themselves. And busha just means there are things that you'd rather keep private. The other night, some guys were eating pizza, you know, in the hallway, and I just came and said, no, go to our rooms. Not doing anything wrong eating pizza. You just don't want people looking at you. When part of the issue that Jews have to learn is we haven't been wealthy for so many centuries. So we don't have a masara about how to be wealthy. We have a big masara about how to be poor because we've been poor forever. We don't have a masara about how to be wealthy since the Spanish, a great era of Spanish Jewry, 700-800 years ago. So we don't have that masara. You can have a lot of money in life. How do you spend it in a way that's understated, that's elegant, that people don't look at you, people don't talk about you? How do you eat in a way people don't talk about you? Busha and sneos, and they're really very similar. Privacy, not wanting to show yourself, and being embarrassed with certain things. It's not based on fault. Yaakov wasn't at fault. There's nothing here at fault. Hashem wants him to marry the four Imos. It's not like he did a chait. Okay, you can deal with the halacha calculus about whether it was or wasn't a chait. But he's not at fault. He feels uncomfortable walking to Maris HaMachpelah, so to speak. He doesn't walk in, he's dead. But he feels uncomfortable arriving at Maris HaMachpelah, ultimately, with two wives when it just doesn't sit well. We say in Yiddish, it's a great expression, there's no Hebrew or English equivalent, pasnisht. Pasnisht doesn't mean, someone just called me a couple nights ago, a person in his mid-30s who never learned in yeshiva. I really wanted to come to yeshiva, I wanted to know the yeshiva, chas v'shalom, but hey, what can you do? We stay in close, he always asked me questions. He asked me as a young budding mechanech, and he says, posting shiurim on Facebook and posting links and promoting yourself and saying, I want to give a shiur, like, what's the balance between, he's a very sincere person. Well, he maybe is listening to the shiur, obviously I can say his name. He said, well, what's the balance between, you know, gaiva and ego, and when you're doing it l'shem shemayim? So I gave him some general guidelines about when and where to do it. But I said, at a certain point, even if it is l'shem shemayim, even if you're not doing it for personal ego, but it's too much marketing of yourself and too much bombastic. And I don't want to give examples because there are people that take certain acts that I feel uncomfortable with. Just it pasnish. It's just, even if you're doing it l'shem shemayim, at a certain point, that's another expression in Yiddish. You remember from your bubby, nishbatamt, everybody. Nishbatam means it's not good taste. Sometimes in life you have to know what's aser, what's mutter, but you also have to have a sixth sense of what's appropriate, what's good taste, what's even not just in Judaism, in general, what's good taste and what's appropriate. So you have to live in an environment with people that have good taste and know like how to calibrate not just between mutter and aser, but what's the right way to do it. And Baruch Hashem, you all have wonderful, wonderful role models to show you that. And Yaakov is an example. There's no iser here. He was forced upon it. But he realizes it's not in good taste to bring two women into Maris HaMachpelah, because that's something the Avos would have been uncomfortable with forever. So he avoids it. So two interesting Rambans. One interesting Ramban about good taste. One interesting Ramban, not in wine, good taste in what's appropriate. And one interesting Ramban about the ram, the Naftali Ayala Shlucha, that when we return like the ram, part of the messages we'll receive is the restored fertility of Eretz Yisrael. Okay, have a good day, everyone. Okay, since there was no tachna, it took a little